I want everyone to turn with me to 2 Chronicles 34. And we're going to tell you about a kind of a sad story, but I mean, the Old Testament is kind of a plethora of sad stories, right? But one story in 2 Chronicles 34 starts off like this. It tells us about Josiah. Josiah, at 8 years old, he became king of Judah. Now let's digest that for a little bit, because I know myself, I've heard this stated in my 40-something years of being in this church. And I've read it in my Bible studies. And again, you've heard me just scan right over it. Josiah was 8 years old when he was king. Hold on. I know I've had 8 year olds, and some of you have had 8 years old. They have had that, the mentality of a child of 8 years old. Okay, so when he was 16 years old, he began to seek God, and at 20, he started implementing huge changes. Now, this is at 16. You know, he started digesting. He said, wait a minute, what's going on here? He started discerning what is right and what is wrong. And he found out in Judah there was a lot of things wrong. And he had the power to change that. So at 20 years old, he started implementing huge changes, such as getting rid of all the idols and Asherah poles and pagan altars, right? So he starts that. Do you think that everybody in Judah, which weren't all Jews, right? We all agree with that. Everybody that lived in Judah weren't all Jews. But everybody that was partaking, saying, hey, wait a minute. Why are you taking my Asherah poles? I'm pretty sure there's a large percentage of people that were thinking that. And wait a minute, how about the high places? You know? On top of that, he started reviving the Levitical priesthood. You know, he found Levitical priests. I'm pretty sure some of them stuck around him and helped raise them. And also on top of that, he started rebuilding the temple and other improvements. I guess you would say in today's political climate, he was far right, you know. All this he started doing, and he hadn't even had the scrolls read to him yet. All this. It wasn't until he started reviving the temple that one of his priests, then Hilkiah, the priest, found the book of the law. He found it. Now, I already think that when the temple started going down, that one of the priests went and stashed it somewhere. Because I can't see. Because just imagine he would give an order to his commander saying, you know what, start cleaning out the temple. And that temple wasn't empty. I'm pretty sure they had all kinds of people living in there. You know, vagrants and what have you. And the commanders back then say, clear it. Okay, we'll clear it. There was no such things about, oh, let's, you know, I might be far sounding wrong, but, oh, the homeless. Well, everybody gets out. Dogs, cats, people, doesn't matter. You're out. And the way they did it, it's questionable maybe in our standards, but they get the job done. When Hilkiah finds the scroll, he gives it to Josiah's secretary, which is Shaphan, right? His Shaphan. And Shaphan reads it. Now, we all talk about the book of the law and the book of the law. This is, well, what was the book of the law, right? It's the Pentateuch, right? Five books, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. You know, I do that with my kids because that's what I used to make them memorize the books. But that's the way but they read that. So it took Shaphan a while for him to go through and read the book, starting with Genesis. It takes you a while there. And so on and so on. And it took, I would think, several days because Josiah probably stopped him and said, wait a minute, we don't supposed to be doing what? You know? Well, yeah, that's what it says here. There was some discourse. And every day or every time he was reading it, the burden started weighing on him, on Josiah. He said, man, we're a mess. And he'd probably peek outside and he saw, you know, pretty much everything going on. So what he did, he said, okay, keep on reading. And after he finished, he felt so distraught. It was so bad that after several days of reading it, that he started tearing his garments. He said, oh God. He said, and he felt, he humbled himself before the Lord. Have we ever been humbled, brother, to that point? Just imagine us at leadership, how he felt. So he said, how can, and he probably prayed, he said, how can I get this fixed? How can I fix this? Because God's going to wipe us off the earth. You know, look at what we're doing. So he went to his priest in Hilkiah. The priest went and started, and his cohort started looking. And they found a prophetess Huldah. After which said, God's wrath was going to be postponed. When they got to the prophetess said, you know what? God knows what you're doing. So he's going to forego his wrath upon Judah until you're dead, until Josiah's dead. And at that time, he said, oh, you know, I'm only 20-something years old, so it's going to be a while. And Huldah went off and said, the reason why he's doing that is because you humbles yourself upon the Lord. He's saying, Josiah did, not Judah as a nation. He said, Josiah, for that reason, I'm going to hold my hand back. If a king can humble himself, just imagine a king, the ego, we can't and we have. The king continued to reinstate the feast days, including the Passover. Remember, there's a lot of people in Judah probably didn't celebrate feast days. Remember, they had Manasseh, right, as a king before that. And he was an embarrassment. And I think Amon after him, and he was so bad that his servants killed him. So he started reinstating the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. He made it a huge event, turning the kingdom from Judah towards God. He said, you're going to do this. Have you ever been, us that have had children, we know, we said, you're going to do this. By golly, you're going to do this. Like, you have rebellion. Things were looking up in Josiah's eyes. Things were looking good. We're going the right direction and in his eyes. And you can read that as you go forward. And King Josiah was 26 years old when he turned the whole nation of Judah around. He said, I did it. Physically. Okay? Physically he made them. Then something happened. There's always a then, right? There's always a then or a but. The title of my sermonette is, how effectively do we work at being a Christian? By reading chapter 34, you can effectively say that King Josiah was showing his love for God by making tangible changes, right? He was making tangible ones you can see. But in the next chapter, we just read the next chapter, it shows things a little different. We can skip down to 2 Chronicles, chapter 35, and verses 20 to 22. It says, after all this, that his tangible changes, when Josiah had set the temple in order, Necho, king of Egypt, went up to fight at Carchemish on the Euphrates. And Josiah marched out to meet him in battle. In verse 21, he says, "But Necho sent messengers to him, saying, 'What quarrel is this? Is there, king of Judah, between you and me?'" In other words, what are you doing? You know, I'm going up against an Assyrian stronghold. Well, what are you doing in there? And he went on, if you read it, King Necho knew what kind of knew what Ulda the prophet had said. "It is not you I am attacking at this time." Ah, at this time. "But the house of with which I am at war." At this time, we can probably translate, King Necho wasn't supposed to go against Judah until after Josiah had died. "God has told me to hurry." Okay? King Necho tells him, so you stop opposing God, he said, "who is with me, or he will destroy you." It goes back to like, along with what Paul to the Romans, Romans 8:31, that's my favorite book, verse of the Bible. It says, "If God is with you, who can be against you?" Who? "However, he will not turn away from him, but disguise himself to engage him in battle." He would not listen to what Necho had said at God's command, but went to fight him on the plains of Megiddo. He didn't listen to him. Okay. Well, it goes on towards the end of the chapter where the king gets an arrow in him, King Josiah, and he's carried off and he dies. What mistake did King Josiah make? He let his pride get in the way, didn't he? "I'm the king of Judah. And remember, he's 26 years old. You know, I've got my shoulders bowed back. And now don't you tell me what I'm going to do. Because I got God with me, you know. God made, you know, I turned this whole nation around. So he's on my side." He's thinking. King Josiah was taken aback by what King Necho told him. Probably thought, nobody's going to tell me what to do. King Josiah, as a leader, did he seek counsel like he did before? Did he go to his Levitical priest, you know, which by now is a lot by fully established, right? Did he go there? He had the prophetess, Ulda, right? Why didn't he go to her? You know, do I go against King Necho? And they would probably tell him no. He had already counseled her at once. But no. Why didn't he humble himself like he did before? He interfered with the Pharaoh Necho when he was going to lay siege on Carchemish, a Syrian fortress. King Josiah had no dog in that fight. He should have let them fight it out because he knew that God was using King Necho to wipe out a godless nation. But no. After doing all the right things for Judah, the 26-year-old king at the time, and I'm not, you know, we all have that little cocky. He was just a little too cocky. Makes a huge mistake. How many of us confer with the people around us when we're making a major decision? Those of us that are married, do we check on our spouse before we make a major decision? Or no, I'm the boss, or I'm the one that's going to make this. It's my money, or whatever you want to use. Question goes both ways, right? Let's go to Dr. Luke. Dr. Luke 17, verse 10. And it says, "So likewise, ye, when you shall have done all those things which are commanded of you, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have done that which have our duty to do.'" That's what doctors. King Josiah made it his duty to turn Judah to God. He said, "I'm going to do this." Because the books of the law say that. The difference, except his demeanor. That's the only thing he needed to work on. his attitude. That's the difference. He was affected by force to remove all the physical aspects of paganism and but how about the spiritual? You know, that's the only shortfall. We work at all our physical effects at removing sins, right? Our dietary laws, calendar, but we're still working on that spiritual. The compassion part, the caring part, that's what we're working on. It's your call. It's my call. You know? When somebody's disrespectful to us, do we, shrug it off? Do we keep our cool? That's basically what it says, turning the other cheek, right? Keep our, forget him. Or do we spout off right after him? James tells us not to be quick to answer, but to be slow, right? Jesus' half-brother, quick to hear and slow to anger. You can find that in James chapter 1, verse 19. But do we keep our cool? Also, how about another spiritual aspect? By sharing, a giving, be a giving nature. Paul tells us that in 13:16, right? How about that friend that, I'm going to lend you my drill. Sure, your neighbor lends you a drill. That's a DeWalt commercial grade. Okay, here it goes. And 1 month goes by, 2 months go by, 4 months go by, 5 months will go by. And you say, hey, where's that drill at? Oh, I got it here, yeah. Let's go to Dr. Luke again. What should we do in this position? Do we grab him by the neck and say, hey, I want my drill? No, it says here, Dr. Luke chapter 6, verse 30. It says, give to everyone who begs from you, and from one who takes away your goods, do not demand them back. Because we know there's a bigger, we're not materialistic. If you want it that bad, I'm not going to fight you for it. I'm not going to sue you for it, for a drill. But don't ask me to borrow the lawnmower, we got our limits. But what's another aspect of spirituality, being a spiritual? I'm going to give you an example here. The ultimate aspect. In 2012, Aurora, Colorado, mass shooting in Century 16 Theater. It kills 12 people. There were those young men, there were several young men who threw themselves on top of their dates. The bullets found them and killed them, but it did not kill their dates. They saved their dates and gave their bodies and gave themselves for them. How about there was a mass shooting 40 miles north of Houston. The mother and the aunt threw themselves on top of the children. And the mother and the aunt died, but the children survived. John 15:13 tells us there's no greater love has no one than to give his life for his friends. So, are we willing to give our lives for our friends? Each one of us spiritually meets or has met our King Nico. We have something King Josiah didn't have, brethren. That's the Holy Spirit. We have a direct line communication with him. The comforter. So ask yourself, how effective am I at being a Christian? We know the same stuff King Josiah did, but it all deals with our connection, right? Our spiritual connection with God. It's the way we talk. We don't talk in a pompous way. We're not hypocritical. We're not demeaning. We don't talk down to people. And after a while, people start saying, wait a minute, there's something about that person. Something about that. They won't tell you. There's something about that. He never cusses or she never cusses. And he's always or she's always glad to see me. It's how you treat your family. It's how you treat your friends. It's leaving those people saying, there's something about that person. He or she actually meant what he said or she said. They said they were going to be at 5 o'clock and they're here at 5. Or he said he was going to lend it to me and he did. It's like that commercial says, who does that? You know, there's a car commercial or a car maintenance person that says that. And when confronted with a King Nickel, not so much with someone physically stronger, but professionally stronger, like our bosses. How do we react with a overcoming boss or something? How about people that have lost their jobs for the Sabbath? I remember listening to one person said he lost his job. He went to his boss and asked for. He said, "I'm taking off tomorrow, which would be Saturday, and I don't care what you say." And what do you think the boss is going to say? You know, they're not going to fire you for the Sabbath. They're going to find a loophole and say you're fine because you're being obstinate, you're being harassing, or you're threatening me. And here in Texas, you don't need a reason to fire people. So it's the way you handle it. It's the grace. That's what God gives us. The finesse. Seeking counsel. If we're in a hard situation, do we seek counsel within each other? Do we seek counsel with the elder or the minister? Because there's all of us is greater than one of us, right? This way our prayers are heard. Let's go to my final scripture, 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. It says, finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace, and the God of love and peace shall be with you. Brethren, fear God and keep his commandments.